Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We trust you had a wonderful Independence Day weekend, and that leads right into our good martini, Jim, because it would appear that, for the most part, just about everyone had a good holiday weekend because one of the big things the federal officials were worried about was terrorist attacks, either an organized one or a lone wolf one, either inspired or directed by ISIS. And at this point, it simply didn't happen. Here's the explanation from ABC News Justice Department correspondent Pierre Thomas.
Law enforcement is breathing a sigh of relief that we made it through Independence Day with no terror attack on U.S. soil. The concern, I can tell you, was real. Authorities had high security throughout the country, specifically concerned about ISIS and the threat of lone wolves. But unfortunately, the concern did not end with the fireworks last night. The unprecedented social media campaign by ISIS, which is happening now as we speak, is urging its followers to carry out attacks, including here in the U.S.
So obviously the threat doesn't stop just because a three-day holiday weekend is over, Jim. But there had been unprecedented, from what we were told, concern about the chatter and the possibility of a threat and an attack here on U.S. soil, and whether the heightened police presence and heightened awareness had something to do with the fact that there wasn't one, we'll never really know. But ultimately, we had a safe holiday weekend, and obviously the vigilance goes on.
We can call this kind of a good martini for now. And you look at a development like this, and you breathe a little easier. You start wondering, okay, does this mean we rolled up a threat behind the scenes and that some bad guys were taken off the streets, either here or abroad? Does it mean that maybe ISIS is a little overhyped, that maybe their efforts to strike the U.S. homeland aren't quite as advanced as some people had feared? Or, you know, you never want to get too complacent with these sorts of things. Maybe we just got lucky. I myself get a little nervous in the end. Each time the government announces, be on alert, there may be an attack, and there isn't one. There's always the concern that you end up sounding like Chicken Little and people start tuning out these warnings. And it's easy to imagine a scenario in which people tune out the warnings and then in retrospect, something terrible happens and we wish people hadn't paid closer attention to that. But hey, you know, I'll take a terrorism-free 4th of July this year and every year to come. And, you know, I guess knowing that the groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda like to hit America on days like this, like anniversaries and key days and things like that, it's kind of a nice little victory for us that they did not manage to achieve one of their objectives.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll take that. And apparently there was a pretty effective coalition airstrike against key ISIS points in Syria over the weekend as well. So overall, a plus in the fight against ISIS over the past few days, it would appear. All right, on to the bad martini, and we foreshadowed this a bit last week, and this is the situation in Greece. They're obviously in dire straits. They can't pay off their debts, essentially. The European Union keeps extending them a lifeline. They put together a special package for the Greek voters to vote on Sunday, and it was soundly rejected, thanks in part, you would have to assume, by the intense lobbying of far-left Prime Minister Tsipras. And now, by a 61-39% margin, that bailout and debt relief offer has been rejected. Tsipras now says this gives him better negotiation leverage. We'll see. We'll see what the European Central Bank has to say about it. Wall Street not enjoying it in the early moments after the opening bell today. So, Jim, we still don't know what's going to happen here, but the Greeks are definitely rolling the dice here.
Now, for someone like me who doesn't think that the consequences of a Greek financial crisis will be that severe for the United States, may not even really be that epically severe to Europe as a whole. And if you feel like the Greeks have kind of been a more amplified version of the kind of entitlement issues we have here in the United States, with even more generous social spending, a ludicrous number of Greeks taking early retirement, as I discussed in the Morning Jolt and Corner this morning, then in a way, I kind of want reality to hit these people. I want these people to stop kicking the can down the road with these constant restructurings and other little efforts designed to, you know, put off reality. Well, reality is here, and basically the Greeks are put to the question, do you like these terms put forth by Europe to pay back all the money you owe, or do you want to just say no and we'll just hope for the best? And right now they're just hoping for the best. And I think they're about to figure out what happens when no one wants to loan you any more money. The result of this is likely they'll probably enter the euro. They'll start redoing probably the drachma or something like that. You may need a wheelbarrow full of those to buy anything in the stores in Greece. And you're seeing, you know, that right now the Greek people, even if you have money in a safe deposit box, you're not allowed to take it out. The banks are closed. For a little while last week, you're allowed to take out roughly the equivalent of about $120. That's it. we're about to see Greece, you know, what once considered a first world country in Europe, maybe hit some extremely hard economic turbulence to the point of collapse. And we'll see what shakes out from this. I think if there's any really, you know, anxiety-inducing part of this is that when, you know, bad economic times come to Europe, there's always a demagogue that's willing to try to exploit it. And you can only imagine what this could lead to in a country that's already had plenty of demagogues eager to exploit economic hard times.
Well, that's certainly the case. And there's a couple different bad potential outcomes here that we've already talked about a little bit. And one is that there's actually massive economic failure in Greece, which would be horrible for the people in Greece, would be a great warning to other countries that think you can always put this off, as you mentioned. The other thing is that the more Greece gives Europe the stiff arm, it looks like the more Russia might be the one to try and swoop in and play the hero here. And Greece getting cozy with Russia would never be a good thing.
I don't know how much free cash Russia has to throw around in light of all the sanctions and things like that. You know, if anything, we know Putin is opportunistic, and basically handing him an opportunity to, you know, a country basically is right now looking for a savior. It's not unthinkable to imagine Putin eager to step in and play the savior.
All right, let's leave the world stage and rain and rope it back into the United States here for the crazy martini. Literally, that's what happened at the Independence Day parade that Hillary Clinton was walking in New Hampshire. The press corps, in photos that are now famous from various websites, literally corralled by campaign workers in a moving rope line. They were kind of corralled into a little pen as they trailed safely behind Hillary Clinton in this parade. It looked humiliating beyond description for those of us who saw these images. The Clinton campaign says this was actually giving the press a chance to stay close to her, but still give her access to be able to greet the people alongside the parade route. So this wasn't designed to humiliate the press. It was designed to give them better access than if they had just been given access at a specific location along the parade route. So, Jim, what kind of credence are you giving that explanation?
Well, obviously, it's terrible visuals. On the one hand, yes, we completely understand. You know, there's going to be an issue of just how many cameras you can have following around Hillary Clinton. Yes, for a presidential candidate who wants to have warm, fuzzy feelings generated by her walking down the street, having a big crowd of cameras surrounding her so that no one can actually see her is a complication to that. On the other hand, for those of us who think that the press has been way too compliant, way too obedient, you might say, under the extraordinarily limited access to the candidate, the fact that they were rather willingly being, you know, pulled around like almost on a leash is probably a pretty vivid visual there. And you're starting to hear more grumbling about the press really needs to stand up to the candidate. You know, she's been in the race 86 days, Greg. She hasn't had a single national television interview.
Wow.
So again, you know, when you're literally roped off and corralled and being tugged around by Secret Service agents by that, the symbolism is pretty heavy-handed on that one.
Yeah, so you've got the current administration, which has, by all accounts, been one of the most restrictive when it comes to the press. And then you've got the likely Democratic nominee doing this. Just how much can we expect the press to stand up for their dignity, if not their First Amendment rights here?
Yeah, I mean, at what point do you just say, you know, I'm not covering this. I'm not doing this. Get the photos from the wire. I don't get any questions from her. This is ridiculous. Secondly, when the president has to travel someplace, they usually do, and it's a limited amount of space in the venue, they'll do pool reporting, right? They pick one print guy, one radio guy, and one TV guy, one camera guy, and they go out and they cover and they get it and they share all their footage, all of their audio, all of the notes that they take with everybody. And that may make the most sense for an event like this. Also, just observe that if Hillary was doing lots of press availability, something like this would not be considered a big deal. But fairly obviously, she's not all that interested, and she doesn't think she needs this kind of access from the press. And it's up to the press to show that, yes, she does need to answer these questions. So far, as you said, they've been kind of compliant about all this.
Interesting start to the week. Also, we should point out, Jim, a number of prominent conservative birthdays in the past couple of days. Two of them actually today. Former President George W. Bush, 69 today. Nancy Reagan, 94. Very impressive. And Jim Garrity. I won't say the age, and I won't even say the
day. Not 94. Having said that, yesterday morning, Greg, I did get up and I didn't feel so bad. I felt terrific. I just went out, looked at the window, and just yelled at the kids to get off my lawn. And it just felt so natural.
I can only hope to hear more ornery stories as the year goes on and you get just a little bit older. So, Jim, again, happy birthday, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.